Hello, this is Dr. Kelly, and I'm reading Chapter 14, The Harwood Hoax. Even before breakfast was served, the ballroom was bustling with guests. Notes and paws and claws. The staff gathered near the stage while the guests, many still in their nightcaps and gowns, crowded in the middle of the room. Miss J was standing on a table with her book, asking another guest, a chatty chipmunk, some pointed questions. Sybil was comforting an admiring shrew who was very disappointed in the swallow would not be singing that night. Lord Sudsbury was pacing, his tail trembling, with Lady Sudsbury, whose fur was in curlers, by his side. "There, there, my sweet," she said. "There's nothing to fret about." But Mona knew differently. It seemed strange to see the ballroom so colorfully decorated with holly berries and spiderweb snowflakes hanging from the ceiling, and the table draped in leaf skeleton lace, when tonight's celebration had been canceled. Mr. Harwood strode onto the stage under a banner that read, "First Snow Festival." He straightened his tie and cleared his throat. "Good morning," he said. "As you know, there has been a change of plans. Unfortunately, due to the unforeseen circumstances, we must delay this festivity day." Everyone started asking questions at once. "But why?" said the chipmunk. "That's why I came here," complained the shrew. "I was planning to dance till my paws hurt." "And the decorating," added a small rabbit. "Yes, explain yourself, Mr. Harwood," demanded Lady Sudsbury. Mr. Harwood tugged at his robe. "The reasons are complicated, but you will be compensated. This I promise. And there will be complimentary hot honey and acorn cookies tonight, and Harwood Hotel cards to play with." "Cards and cookies," cried the chipmunk. "That's crumbs. I'm heading home." "Me too. No festival means no fun," said the shrew. "No, no, you must stay," exclaimed Mr. Harwood. "It isn't safe."
"Not safe," screeched the shrew.
"What do you mean?"
I knew it,
cried Lord Sudsbury, his tail a tremble. "We're under attack. It's the wolves. They're here at last." The guests gasped. "Oh,
they're not here," said Mr. Harwood, trying to calm everyone out.
"But they are, well, near."
That was the wrong thing to say. Now all the guests were panicking. Lord Sudsbury's tail began to shake violently. Sybil looked frightened.
"I still can't fly properly," she moaned.
Miss J was pacing on top of the table, writing furiously.
"You must stay here," said Mr. Harwood. "We must all hide."
"No, we have to run away," cried a guest.
Others joined in with their suggestions. Mona listened from her spot by the stage. Her ears twitching. Running or hiding, those were the choices. Running or hiding, that's what small animals like her did. That's what she had done her whole life. She had run away from the Harwood because she was afraid she'd made a mistake, but she was happy she had let in the June bug and proud of helping the Sudsburys and making friends with Sybil. She was especially proud of helping Brumble. She didn't want to run anymore, or hide either. She didn't want the wolves to ruin everything. She wanted to have the festival. She wanted to decorate the tree. And just as she thought that, she had an idea. A way to decorate a tree and get rid of the wolves. It was time to take Brumble up on his offer. "It's time that we made the wolves run and hide for a change," cried Mona, excited. Mona didn't realize she had said it aloud, but she had, and loudly too. Loudly enough that it cut through the other conversation, the animals turned to her.
"The wolves? What do you mean? You've got to be kidding."
But then Sybil said strongly in her sweet voice,
"Wait. I want to hear.
What is it, Mona? What is your plan?" And so Mona explained, and as she explained, the eyes of the animals grew wide and bright with the power of a big idea, a brave idea, a brilliant idea. Fernwood Forest was dark when the animals made their way upstream. Of course, many of the guests stayed safely in the hotel. Mr. Sudsbury hid in his room, but quite a few did join in, which was good, since it took the work of many paws and claws and wings to lift the lanterns upstream to the big hollow tree where Brumble slept. The animals barely spoke, just scurried swift and silently as only small animals can be. They brought peppermint, too, in big bundles to line Brumble's tree and mask his scent, another part of Mona's plan. It was cold and blustery, and the air smelled like snow. Mona held tight to her unlit lantern, which swung wildly back and forth. When the howls of the wolves were carried by the wind, the animals all paused, and only when the sound faded did they start again. When they reached the big tree, they stopped. The sound of snorting rumbled from inside.
"I'll wake him," said Mona. "I know Brumble."
No one, not even Mr. Harwood, argued. Mona set down her ladder, her lantern, and scurried through the opening, into the darkness and the smell of fur and fish and berries. Quickly, her eyes adjusted, and she realized she was standing right in front of Brumble's nose. She gulped. Brumble was a lot bigger than she remembered. It was one thing to imagine the plan. Imagine Brumble being happily agreeing.
But would he really be so happy to be woken from his sleep? Mona wasn't sure. She gulped again. She could turn back, run away, hide, but she didn't. So she said in her biggest voice, "Brumble, wake up!" Brumble's ears twitched, but his eyes did not open. "Brumble, wake up!" she cried again. Brumble's other ear twitched. He snorted. But still, he snored on. Mona reached into her apron pocket and pulled out a piece of honeycomb wrapped in a leaf. She had brought it just in case. It was very sticky. "Brumble, please, it's Mona!" she cried for the third time in her loudest voice and held up the honeycomb. The bear's nose wiggled. His tongue stuck out, and with a big lick, he gobbled up the honeycomb, covering Mona's paw in drool. "Good," he mumbled, his eyes flickering open. He gave a huge yawn. Mona tumbled backward from the force of it. Brumble looked at her sleepily and said, "Gosh, it's you."
I'm so sorry to disturb you, Brumble," stammered Mona, "but I need your help."
It took Mona a few tries to explain the idea because Brumble kept falling back asleep, but he finally heard and understood it all, and he liked it well enough. Those noisy wolves are the reason I had to move my home in the first place," he grumbled. And Brumble especially, like Mr. Hartwood's offer of more honeycomb and berries as well, to be ready for him upon spring awakening. And so Mona went back out and told everyone Brumble was in agreement. The first part of the plan had worked. The next, lining the tree with peppermint, was easy enough to do. But putting up the lanterns proved much more difficult. The wind blustered and made balancing on the branches with the lanterns very difficult. The walnut shells were too big for Mona to hang up herself. So while the squirrels and chipmunks and birds hooked the lanterns onto the branch, she took the most dangerous job, lighting them. When they were up and ready, Mona scrambled back and forth, balancing oh so carefully on the limbs, and lit each candle. The flames flickered in the wind, but miraculously stayed lit. Soon, there would only be a few more candles to light, but Mona wanted to get every last one. The candles were small and would burn down quickly. If the wolves didn't see the lights, if the trick didn't work, it would be her fault, and so she stayed, lighting lantern after lantern until the very last one was ablaze. When she finished, she blew out her candle, climbed down to join the others, and looked up. The tree was beautiful, as though it were hung with stars. For a second, Mona didn't feel like a tiny mouse at all, but big as a bear, maybe even big as a tree. "It's not the Hartwood, but it just might do," said Mr. Hartwood with a nod. "As long as Wolf thinks so." Just as he said those words, the howls made Mona jump. "Come quickly," commanded Mr. Hartwood. The few animals remaining obeyed at once, scurrying away from the tree, into the bushes, out of sight. "Awoo!" The howls grew louder, closer. "Stop," commanded Mr. Hartwood. "We'll make too much noise if we move." It was true, but what would they do? They had no peppermint left to disguise their scent. "As long as the wolves head to the tree, we shall be safe, said the badger, "as long as the plan works." Would it? Mona hoped with all of her heart. She'd hear the wolves even louder now. "Awoo!" Mona peered out between the branches of the bush. She couldn't see the wolves yet, but she could see Brumble's tree glittering in the darkness. All at once she froze. Not just the tree was glittering, the forest too, with eyes. The yellow eyes of the wolves. Any moment now they would find the tree. Any moment they would see the lanterns too. And then something terrible happened. Whoosh! A great gust of wind tore through the forest. So strong, it ripped back the branches, snapping away twigs, and with a mighty whoosh, blew out the lanterns.